Chapter 35. Another disturbed night. A ghastly dream in which I found myself back on that dark, icy morning when I entered Lincoln's Inn to find the two students standing by the ice-covered fountain. But in my dream, when they turned to face me, one slipped away into the darkness. The other was Piers. He reached in and turned the body over, and it was Guy lying there with his throat slashed. I woke with a gasp to the sound of heavy rain lashing at the window, and then my heart jumped with horror, for footsteps were ascending the stairs. I exhaled with relief as I recognized Barrack's steps. He must have been out late again. In the morning it was still raining, and I saw that large puddles were spreading on my lawn. As I dressed, I looked across to the wall that divided my land from the old Lincoln's Inn orchard. Water would be coming in from there as it had 2 years before. The ground was becoming saturated. In the parlour, Barrack was sitting at the table looking dubiously at a plate of bread and cheese. "I heard you come in late last night," I said.
"Went out drinking with some friends."
"Again?" I reached for some bread. "Couldn't you take Tamison out one night?" He fixed me with a blear-eyed look.
"I needed to get out for a drink. I'm fed up of hanging around waiting for some new horror to happen."
"Where is Tamison?"
"Still in bed, snoring. She woke up when I came in last night and went on at me. So she's catching up on sleep."
I realized their reconciliation wasn't working out. His expression made it quite clear he wasn't going to talk about it. "Guy was here to dinner last night," I said.
"Tell him all about us, did you?"
Barrack needled. "He told me about some troubles of his own. Money has been going missing. He thinks it's Piers, but can't quite bring himself to believe it." Barrack gave me a penetrating look.
"When I saw the old Moor with Piers, he seemed to think the sun shone out of his arse."
"He wanted someone to care for, to teach, but he's beginning to see what Piers is really like."
"Are you sure?"
I wondered whether he had read between the lines, guessed Guy's feelings were not so simple as that.
"Yes, but he won't accuse him yet, and Piers can be persuasive." "How about if we were to pay a visit to young Piers, put a bit of pressure on him? We could see how he reacts and take it from there."
He smiled briefly, a hard smile.
"You mean when Guy's not there?" "He's not going to let us do it when he is there, is he?"
I hesitated, then said, "I know Guy'll be out this evening. He's going to see Belknap again. Knowing his habits, he'll go after supper, probably around 7.
"We go to Bucklersbury then."
I nodded agreement.
"We only talk to him, though. Nothing rough. Even if he's not a thief, he's an eavesdropper and a nasty bit of work. Won't do any harm if we put some salt on his tail."
"All right." I finished my bread and cheese and got up.
"We must go," I said. "I had word last night. Harstad has called a meeting to discuss this latest development. At Whitehall this time, not Lambeth Palace."
Barrack got up quickly.
"Yes, I need something to do, or I'll end up as mad as Adam Kite."
When we reached Whitehall, it was to learn that Lord Hertford and Sir Thomas Seymour were both with the coroner. Barrack was forbidden to attend the meeting, told to wait on a bench outside Harsnett's room again.
"I'm sorry,"
I whispered to him as the guard knocked on the door.
"I'm getting used to it, common fellow that I am."
Barrack gave one of his sardonic grins, stretching out his legs, his boots muddy from riding through the streets. The guard frowned. A respectful demeanour was expected within the royal palace. From within, Harsnett's voice called me to enter. I took a deep breath and opened the door. Harsnett was sitting behind his desk. Lord Hertford stood by the wall. Both looked grave. Sir Thomas Seymour lounged against the wall beside his brother, an angry look on his louche, handsome face. As always, he was dressed like a peacock, a doublet in bright blue today, a cap with a huge feather in the band.
"Close the door, Matthew," Harsnett said. "And come over here. I don't want anyone overhearing us."
"Barrack's sitting outside, but he's safe."
"No one is safe at Whitehall just now," Hartford said.
"The very walls have ears." He turned his penetrating gaze on me.
"We were to meet at the Lambeth Palace, but His Grace the Archbishop has other concerns today."
"Not more bad news, my lord."
"Not from the courtiers that were arrested. They're going to have to let them go. But Bonner is tightening the screw further on the London radicals. Early this morning, the bishop's men and the London constables arrested 8 men for possession of unlawful books, together with 3 printers and a bunch of apprentices for acting unlawful plays. By Jesu, they're keeping the London constables busy. The Archbishop is trying to find whether any of those arrested have associations with him."
"Is there any danger of that?"
Thomas Seymour asked.
"He thinks not."
"The King has always loved him," Harsnett said quietly.
"The King was close to Anne Boleyn and Cromwell and Wolsey,"
Thomas Seymour said bitterly.
"Yet he destroyed them all. He has never truly trusted anybody, nor ever will."
"Quiet, Thomas,"
his brother said severely. "Things are not so bad as that." He looked at Harsnett, then me.
"Yet if this were to come out now, that the Archbishop has launched a secret hunt for a madman who is killing lapsed radicals because the Book of Revelation told him to, it would be very dangerous. And the longer it goes on, the harder it becomes to conceal."
"Have you learned nothing more, Gregory?"
he asked Harsnett with sudden passion.
"I wish I had. I've been working day and night. None of the radical groups know about Goddard. There's no trace of him in London or the neighbouring counties. It's as though when he left his lodgings, he vanished into the air."
Lord Hartford turned to me.
"And you found the killer had been using a lawyer as his agent, but now he's killed the lawyer too?"
"He has." I told him the story of Belknap and Feldday. When I'd finished, he stood pulling at his long beard anxiously, almost tugging it. Outside, rain slashed against the window.
"So there have been 5 murders linked to the Vials of Wrath. 2 more to go. And this man Feldday killed along the way."
"We must catch him."
Hartford turned to his brother.
"Judging by your news, the King is determined to marry Catherine Parr however long she keeps him waiting."
"What news, my lord?"
Harsnett's head jerked up.
"My brother has been appointed ambassador to the Regent of the Netherlands."
"Because the King fears Lady Catherine may still have a mind to marry me,"
Sir Thomas said. Angry as he'd looked, he shifted his stance, swaggered lightly.
"We cannot be sure that's why you were chosen," his brother said. "And if it is, think yourself lucky the King is sending you on an ambassadorship, not to the Tower."
"Perhaps."
Sir Thomas looked at me curiously.
"You, sir. Someone said the King made mock of your bent back when he was at York 2 years ago."
I took a deep breath.
"He did, sir."
Who had told him that story, I wondered.
"He wouldn't get to York now," Seymour said. "He's so fat he can hardly walk. He has ulcers on both legs now. When they're bad, he has to be taken around the palace in a wheeled chair. They say when the ulcers leak, the smell as you enter the privy quarters would stun a bull." "Where do you leave here, Master Shardlake? If you hear the squeaking of wheels in the corridors, I should run as fast as you can in the opposite direction."
He laughed bitterly. Harsnett shifted uneasily in his chair. Lord Hartford shook his head.
"Your indiscretions will be the death of you one day, Thomas."
"But it's true the King's health worsens every month."
"He can't live many years longer." And then if a queen sympathetic to reform were in place, ready to assume the regency for young Prince Edward? He spread his hands.
I thought, they've planned for this marriage, looking years ahead. How deeply my hunt for Roger's killer had become entangled in court politics.
When do you go abroad, Sir Thomas? Harsnett asked.
I don't know. A few weeks, perhaps.
Harsnett nodded, his face expressionless, though I guessed that, like me, he would rather Sir Thomas and his careless tongue were gone tomorrow. But we badly needed the support his household could give. I jumped at the sound of a loud knock. After Sir Thomas' words, a shiver of fear seemed to pass through the room. But Lord Hertford called out in a firm voice, "Come in!"
Barrack entered. He knew when to be humble, and bowed his head under Hertford's glare.
"I'm sorry to interrupt you, my lord, but the guard from Lockley's tavern is here. Gently, they found him."
"Alive?"
Hope came into Harsnett's face.
"No, sir. Dead."
Barrack looked around the company, took a deep breath.
"In the old charter house. The manner of his death shows he's the sixth victim."
Lord Hertford seemed to slump. He put a hand to his brow.
"Who knows?"
"Nobody who matters, my lord. Yet."
"Shardlake, Harsnett, go there now."
"I wish to go too," Sir Thomas said.
"Very well,"
Lord Hertford agreed. He looked between us.
"He has made us all dance, has he not? And now again, will we ever have him dancing as he should, at the end of a rope?"